Hey, this is Shane Malcolm.
And this is Jordan Schweitzer.
We're the creators of Boot Bags.
Fashionable, durable, washable. Boot Bags are the most convenient way to carry your cleats to and from training or games. Check us out at bootbags.us.
You're listening to the Forest Fancast Podcast.
Nottingham Forest, fresh off the back of three defeats. I really can't be bothered with this. This is the point where I do an introduction that's pithy and pun-ridden, and I try and get us off on the right foot as we begin this latest episode of Forest Fancast. But you know what's harder than being a Nottingham Forest fan, watching Nottingham Forest try to play football right now? It's being a Nottingham Forest fan, having watched Nottingham Forest try to play football, and then have to talk about it on a podcast. So this is all you're going to get. This is your intro. Welcome to Forest Fancast. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm sorry that the intro was so downbeat, but that truly is a window into my mindset right now, and I'm sure I'm not alone. I hope that my contributor on the show today can maybe rise us up a little bit. I'm joined today by James, who is in Nottingham. Hey, James, how's it going, mate?
Very well, thank you, Mark. And I think that introduction was very apt for how everybody's feeling about Forest at the minute. And, you know, you hope that I can bring a bit more energy and enthusiasm to proceedings. I think the only positive thing I can say is that Derby is still below Nottingham Forest in the table. That's about it. I can't lie. It's not looking good for the Reds at the minute.
Yeah, it's usually these two teams are in a tussle of anything you can do, we can do better. But this season, it appears to be anything you can do, we can do worse. So. Yeah. Thank you, Derby. Never thought I'd say that out loud, but thank you, Derby. So, James, as I mentioned in the intro, Forest with three defeats. Ordinarily, we would spend our time trawling through the wreckage of a 2-0 defeat away at Barnsley, a 2-0 defeat away at Bournemouth. And then today, we're recording this on Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening for James, Forest defeat at the City Ground, 1-0 to Swansea. I really am not kidding. I don't particularly have the appetite to go through these three games with a fine-tooth comb, James. Not least of all, because it's beginning to feel to me, James, like those three games were one long game, right? Where very little changed. Yes, there was a little bit of a reshuffle in terms of personnel, but the formation was the same, the approach was the same, the energy levels were the same, and the outcome was the same, three defeats. And it almost felt like Forest were playing one long game during which they took a few days break, almost like an extended, you know, halftime or period break, as it would be in NHL if we were playing hockey, right? And a little period break there, and then they came back out and it was as you were. And so it's really, really hard to have a conversation that's distinct, I think, when you're talking about three performances that essentially mirror one another. And it's definitely difficult to raise enthusiasm levels when it's three straight defeats. What are your observations, broad strokes, as it relates to those performances as a whole?
I think another element, Mark, I think you hit the nail on the head there with some of the aspects of the three performances that you mentioned. But I think the most worrying element for me that was the same in all three games is that the mentality was the same. The mentality being, as soon as the opposition scored the first goal, you felt that the players felt, the staff felt, and definitely the supporters at home felt that that's the game. The game is done and dusted. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's slightly more excusable in the Barnsley game. Well, it's not really, but to an extent because of how late the goal was. But in the Bournemouth and Swansea games, there was still plenty of time for Forest to turn it round and come back into the game and change the momentum of the match. And it didn't feel like Forest believed that they could do that. And I hate to hark back to the back end of last season and kind of the fall from grace that Forest had at the end of the campaign. But you talk about how those three matches this week have kind of all blended into one. I think you could go back even further and you know, this run of really poor, lifeless, passive performances goes back and stretches back months, stretches back different systems, stretches back different managers as well. It's a really, really kind of worrying slog that Forest are in at this moment in time. And for me, the most worrying thing, like I say, is the fact that the mentality in all three of those defeats appeared to be exactly the same. A resignation that as soon as the first goal went in, that's it, and Forest aren't going to get anything from the game.
No, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And we said off mic, you know, with the Wickham game as well, it felt like there was a high degree of trepidation. Like the team, you could see the team, there was an anxiety. They knew that they should and could beat Wickham, right? The comparative qualities of the two teams on the day, the experience of playing in the Championship, which of course is brand new in Wickham's case, Forest should have rolled them over, especially at the City Ground, and did ultimately. But until that first goal was scored, there just appeared to be high degrees of anxiety. The first goal went in, you could see the team relax, and ultimately they got that victory, right? They got the win, they got over the line. But in every other game, the minute that first goal goes in against them, I don't think I've ever seen a Forest team just concede ground so rapidly and see that slump in shoulders and that...
I don't think...
It's really hard to describe.
Yeah. I don't think, both in terms of supporters towards players, and I think players towards players as well, which is the most important thing. I think within the Forest 11, I don't think there's any trust there. I don't think Forest players back each other to get them out of trouble, essentially, within games. One of the kind of issues that Forest had last season, I felt, was that tactically there was a real over-reliance on individuals to bail them out of troubles at times. Joe Lolley to produce a bit of magic, Lewis Graben to get on the end of something and grab a winner or something. Sammy Amiobi likewise. Forest, I don't think, have changed that approach this season. It's still, let's hope one of those wide men do something. Let's hope Knockhart can do something. Let's hope Freeman can do something. Let's hope Lyle Taylor can produce something individually. But because of how poor general performances have been for the most part of this campaign, the trust that those players are going to turn up and do that, I don't think is there. And then on the flip side to that, I don't think there is a trust within this Forest team that they're going to be able to keep a clean sheet and defensively be resilient for the 90 minutes. There is always a belief, even, you know, with going into that second half against Wickham where Forest were 1-0 up, you can tell that there is an anxiety there, both within the fan base and the players on the pitch, that Wickham are definitely going to get one or two big chances. This Forest team are not good enough to dominate. This Forest team are not good enough to control things. And I think that lack of trust leads to real anxieties, which, like you say, manifested in that first half against Wickham, because Forest were desperate to get that first goal because they knew psychologically at the back of their minds that something was coming from the opposition at one point. And I think the difference between the Wickham game and the three games we've seen this week is that thing that Forest feared in that Wickham match happened in all three of those games. And the most concerning thing is the Reds. Whether you blame Chris Hughton for this, whether you blame the players on the pitch and the lack of leadership, whatever you want to say, there wasn't a plan to get Forest back into a game. And for me, that is really, really concerning, because we've spoken on our podcast, I've spoken on Forest Fancast before this season about how, look, the playoffs isn't that far away. You know, just give these players a little bit more time, a bit more cohesion. You've got one of the best managers in the league to do it, to turn things around. That relegation zone's not that far away either. And I don't want to go overboard and be hyperbolic and what have you, but this is a Forest team that spent a lot of money in the summer, that have got Steve Cooper after the game, the Swansea manager. He said, on paper, this is the best team in the division that we've come today and beat. You know, the personnel is there, but are flirting with a relegation battle. And I think Forest fans and players need to wake up, because that is a genuine possibility at the minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree with everything you just said there. You know, I think, obviously, we just jumped straight into this episode, stream of consciousness. I want to do a little housekeeping here and say that one of the reasons we changed the format of this episode is, it speaks to mine and James and probably a lot of Forest fans' frustration right now, and the fact that we just don't want to go back over these defeats in great detail. It's depressing. But also, this episode was supposed to be a state of the club episode. We talked on Twitter about wanting to spend some time talking about the structure of the club, talking about the leadership within the club or lack thereof, talking about the recruitment policy and talking about, of course, about what's going on the field as well. We've had to slightly rejig that, and we're going to revisit that hopefully in the next episode. But we're going to use this episode really as an on-ramp to that bigger conversation. And, you know, in any club, there are really, outside of the fans, of course, within the walls of the organization, there are really three distinct components, and that is leadership, coaching, and players. So we're going to set aside talking in great deal about leadership and coaching, and we're going to spend most of our time in this podcast today talking about where the rubber meets the road, or where the boots meet the turf, in that we're going to focus on the players. And to James's point, there has been some turnover. There has been a significant influx of players, and not just numbers, but quality. And I agree with Steve Cooper. When you look at these individuals, when you look at, and then they look at the collective, it's incredibly impressive. And then when you look at Chris Hooton, who's a manager with great, great pedigree and a great track record in this league, it's really, really difficult to understand why, not only why are we where we are, but why does there appear to be this malaise? Why does there appear to be this lack of energy? This, maybe it's a trust piece, as James was saying. I don't know. But we're going to spend some time looking at that today. So, James, I have a few questions for you. The first thing I want to hone in on, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I just got done saying we're going to focus on players, and maybe this strays a little bit into coach territory as well, in that it kind of speaks to Hooton and the way that he has historically liked to set teams up. But let's start with defense. Our defense has been pretty consistent this year in terms of personnel. Yes, there have been one or two tweaks and changes. Most of them have been governed by injuries. But by and large, our back seven has been more or less the same. It's, you know, been Samba in goal, typically Figgs and McKenna at centre-back, certainly since Worrell's been injured. Ribeiro on the one side, Christie on the other, and then, generally speaking, it has been Colback and Yates, which is strange. I know Art has struggled a little bit with fitness and with some niggling injuries, but you would have thought of the three of those defensive midfielders, maybe Art would have been the first on the team sheet. So I guess my question for you is this. Given that there has been so little change in that defensive unit, is it performing as well as it can right now? Should it be performing better? What needs to happen in order for Forest to begin getting those clean sheets that you talked about? And I guess my follow-on question to that is, do we need to be playing with two defensive midfielders? And if we do, from the three I mentioned, which two should we start with?
I think on your first point, Mark, about the defensive structure of Forest, I think if you reel off the personnel there are some excellent players in that team, excellent players in that back four. Cyrus Christie has got real good championship experience. Scott McKenna was one of the hottest prospects in Scottish football for the last couple of years. And Figueiredo and Ribeiro, sorry, we know what they're like. They're decent championship defenders, essentially. I think, though, the issues that Forest have had defensively, I think, you know, a defence is not necessarily defined by the players that play in defence, if that makes sense. Your front press is really, really important to that. And I don't think Forest press has been effective enough this season. I don't think there's enough of a work ethic past that back four, essentially. And that often means that Forest have played through the middle, played through the flanks way too easily, and it leaves that back four exposed. And granted, like I say, they're good players on paper, and personnel-wise, I quite like that combination that Hughton goes with. But, you know, when you're exposed...
They're going to make a mistake, right?
Yeah, they're going to make a mistake.
When there's that much pressure, the mistake's going to be punished.
Absolutely, and the key thing, the best championship defences, and the best defences in any kind of... you know, division in football, it's built upon team ethic. It's built upon the 10 outfield players grafting, putting in a shift and ensuring that the lines are very difficult to break. And I don't think Forest have got that. There's not a good enough defensive mentality throughout the team at the minute, which has surprised me somewhat, because that's something that Chris Hughton prides himself on.
Right.
You know, that's the thing that is the bedrock of his management. And that was the thing that opposition fans, fans of clubs that he's previously managed, that's what they warned Forrest about. They said, look, you're going to be competitive, you're going to be solid, but you're going to be bored. And granted, Forest fans have been bored in the last couple of weeks, but it's not because of nil-nil draws and Forest, you know, grinding out results here and there. It's because Forest are losing games easily. They're conceding goals left, right, and centre. So it's a bit worrying, but I would point the defensive problems down to an issue with the entire 11 and the amount of energy and effort that's been put in rather than defensive errors. However, what I will say is, on the point of Cyrus Christie, for example, I don't think it's quite worked for him yet in a Forest shirt. Granted, he's filling massive boots in Matty Cash's, and you know, the expectation to come in and replicate what he did is quite unrealistic, I think. But it just hasn't quite worked for him so far. So I would say individually, he's someone that struggled in that defensive system. But
let me pull you up on that one second there, because I feel like on social media, Christie has drawn an unfair amount of criticism. You know, we talk about the defense being under a high degree of pressure because we're not getting the support in front of that defense, and so any mistake can be punished. And there's no doubt that Christie's made some, and Forrest have been punished. But if you look at his offensive output, if you look at his ability to deliver crosses, if you look at his overall game, I don't think he has been, not only do I think he's not been the worst player in the team, I don't think he's been the worst player in the defense. I think Figueiredo takes that award and then some. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, do you not feel like the ire that's being directed at Christie right now is disproportionate?
I think the criticism of Christie, though, I think the perspective on him is slightly different because of the amount of championship experience that he's got. Mm. I think that ensures that he probably gets, whether it's warranted or not, I personally would say it's not, but he's under the microscope a little bit more because the expectation was this is a good, solid championship right back that Forest are getting here. I would agree with you about Figueiredo. I think he's been, I thought he was, you know, loose today for Forest, and he has been loose for a number of games. On your second point about the defensive midfielders, though, last season when we were asked to kind of dissect what went wrong for Forest, I said one of the main problems is the midfield is too defensive. It's too conservative. You need somebody who's progressive, who's forward-thinking, who can set a tempo in that middle of the pitch. And I quite like Ryan Yates. I think he works really, really hard. I think he gives you a good, you know, shield in front of the back four. And since Hughton's come in, he's actually, you know, been on, you know, the receiving end of some, you know, really, really good chances, got into the box and you know, he's developed into a little bit more of a box-to-box midfielder. But I don't think you can play Yates and Colback and expect to win games on a consistent basis. I think it's too passive. It's too negative. And I think the reason why Hughton's sticking with it is, well, I don't really know. I don't really know. It's just, what are your thoughts on that, Mark? Because I just think it's too, it's easy to criticise it because they're two players who don't necessarily bring a great deal to Forest other than a real high kind of passing accuracy. But like, I don't think they set a sufficient tempo for Forest to work from.
No, I agree. I think everything we're doing when we have the both of them on the field together is reactive as opposed to proactive, which is probably just another way of saying what you just said in regards to tempo. So my inclination would always be, assuming he's fit, would be to start Arta. And I would go with Yates over Colback so far this season. That isn't to say that Colback suddenly become a wretched player and baby out with the bathwater and all of that. Colback's a good player. You know, we Forest fans have very short memories sometimes, and I think we're forgetting about how hard we were braying, right, to have him back at the City Ground because he was our new Ginger Prince. He's a good player. He's not playing well right now. I think Ryan Yates is outplaying him. Honestly, I don't know that I'm even necessarily sold on playing two defensive midfielders. I think to your point in regards to high press, I think you're encouraging teams to compress you. You're encouraging pressure when you set up the store to say, we're going to have our defense playing deep. We're going to have our defensive midfielders playing just outside of the box. Come break us down. Swansea did a pretty good job of that today, but Swansea clearly have their store in order. We don't. So defensively right now, we look fragile. And to your point, offensively, we're not setting tempo through the middle of the park. I would like to see Arter in there with Yates. I want to go back to defense there for a moment, though, and ask you. So we both talked about Figgs. We both talked about the difficult season he's had, and I think also the end of last season as well. So what's the ideal situation there? Is it for Worrell to get fit and have Worrell come back in alongside McKenna? Would you like to see Mbeso come back in there? I think he's had one or two performances and actually played pretty well on those occasions.
Well, Mbeso, he kind of start as soon as he came into the club. I mean, Lamucci started him in his last couple of games, and in that defeat to Bristol City at the City Ground, he started, made a mistake for one of the goals, and since then Houghton hasn't started him at all. Mm. I think the ideal situation would be to have Joe Worrell back in there, because you know he's a very capable centre back at this level, brings. I know we don't want to go into leadership in today's podcast, but you know he brings that somewhat onto the pitch. I think you know his passion. For
oh no, by leadership I'm talking about club ownership.
I get you. But I think it's you can't really question his commitment to the cause. So I think you get him into the fold. I think if you're going to take Figueiredo out, then Worrell is your go to guy there. But at the same time, Embiid's a young player, you know. It's that really fine balancing act that you've got to do with young players. Do you give Embiid an opportunity within the first team now and expect him to make mistakes and let him learn and develop? Because don't forget, he's coming from a different country as well, different climate, different culture that he's got to get used to. Or are Forest in a position where they're able to you know take risks like that? So I think, just as a kind of safe bet at this moment in time, you bring Worrell in and kind of hope for the best with him and McKenna as a partnership.
So as far as the defence is concerned, if you switch out Figgs for Worrell, are you comfortable keeping Christie for the time being?
I think so.
Given the alternatives, right?
Given the alternatives, yeah. The alternatives, that is the... That's the issue that Forest have got. And like you say, from an offensive point of view as well, if you look at the lack of creativity that Forest have despite the number of creative players Forest have got, the lack of actual creativity we see on a match day, Christie's attacking output, you know, he has the ability to whip in a real dangerous cross from that right-hand side, and he gives good pace as well down that flank. So I think you've got to stick with him, really.
Yeah. So back to the defensive middies before we transition into more the offensive end of the field. And you don't have to concur with me, but would your tendency be to start Arter and Yates, as would mine? Or would you like to see a change in shape? Would you like to just see the one defensive midfielder? Do you think, you know, to your point about tempo, do you think we can better affect that if we're placing more offensive players higher up the field and not placing such an onus on being compact and defensive minded and, you know, just trying to shut up teams in our own defensive third?
I thought when Forest signed Harry Arter, Mark, I thought that was Forest's best bit of business, essentially. Yeah. Because I thought he was an outstanding player at this level. He's someone who, you know, in the last couple of years anyway as well, you could probably make a case for playing in a lower Premier League team as well. Mm-hmm. Has had a great career and, you know, was good last season as well for Fulham. So I expected him to come in and have a real impact. Granted, injury problems haven't helped him, but I would agree with bringing him back into the fold, because Harry Arter brings a certain element of drive to his game, I think. And not only is that a mental, psychological kind of thing, he also physically, on loads of occasions throughout his career, you will see him, he'll win a 50-50 and then drive you up the pitch. And Forest really, really lacked this at this moment in time. And I think if you're going to play Arter, I think some might say if he's doing this breaking down and moving Forrest up the pitch, then you need a callback there who can go and sit. The reality is Arter, because of his fitness problems and injury issues, Arter can do that moving up the pitch to a certain point. It's more likely that he's going to break it down in his own half, essentially, and then let someone else kind of carry it forward, I would say. So in my opinion, your ideal partnership is Arter and Yates, who can provide that physicality, that energy in the middle of the pitch. And then when one sits, when one decides to kind of hover in front of the back four, the other can push forward. And I think Yates is able to do that and kind of complement Arta's style and the fact that Arta doesn't necessarily have the legs anymore. So that would be the two that I would go with, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to preface what I'm about to say by saying I'm not saying these two players are the same in terms of quality. I know that one is quite clearly head and shoulders above the other. But when I look at Arta, to me, he's a pivot player in the same way Roy Keane was a pivot player. You know, to your point, you can win a 50-50 in your own half, and then you can quickly help transition the ball into the opposition's half and begin contributing to the offensive output. And so I see that with Arta. I think also Yates has the capacity to do that, but I think if you put him in alongside Arta, you don't need him to do that. And I think you can give Arta license to be further up the field. Winning those 50-50s perhaps on the halfway line or even in the opposition's half, knowing that you've got that security of Yates in behind. I don't know right now that there's... I mean, I don't certainly in terms of results, I don't know right now that you can influence results by having just Yates as a defensive midfielder versus Yates and Colback. I don't know that that's the issue right now. And I don't know that's suddenly going to turn 1-2 nil defeats into draws or victories. I mean, I just don't see that. To me, there needs to be more of a plan. There needs to be more energy. There needs to be more cohesiveness, certainly, in the opposition's half, right? So let's transition to our attacking players.
Sorry, Mark, can I just say one more point about the Yates and Colback situation?
Yeah.
Right. The purpose of that partnership is to ensure Forrest are a lot more solid, right? Mm. Mm-hmm. And Forrest are not a lot more solid as a result of it.
Right.
So why keep going with it?
Yeah, you really should be doing this podcast because you're far more succinct than I am.
at the very least, try and change it. Go with something else, because if the purpose of a partnership is to make you solid and the team are not more solid, then there is clearly an issue with that partnership and you have to rectify it. That's the way I would sum up that issue in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely. So my next question for you, James, as we think about our offensive output or lack thereof, is how do you have a squad that includes Sammy Amiobi, Luke Freeman, Anthony Knockhart, Joe Lolley, Lewis Graben, Lyle Taylor, Guerrero, Mighton. When you look at the attacking options, and you look at the number of goals and assists that those players have individually, with the exception of Guerrero, accumulated over the last three or four seasons, and you consider that players like Freeman and Knockhart were players that Forest fans were calling out by name. We knew that these individuals had the ability to help a team get over the line, to help a team at least make playoffs. So when you look at that abundance of offensive talent, how do we find ourselves with just 9 goals so far after 14 matches?
Because my feeling on that is I completely agree with the points you make about, you know, on paper, again, I mean, you could say this about every single department of the Forest squad, essentially. On paper, it's outstanding. Mm. But this area of the pitch in particular, you think, especially with the summer acquisitions, I mean, it was good enough as it was going into this season. But with the additions that were made in the summer, it's now as good as you're going to get in the Championship. My problem is, as I said earlier, in the sense that Forest are not defending as a unit, I don't think offensively Forest are acting like a unit either. Because if you watch where kind of Forest's chances come from, they come from an isolated bit of brilliance from one of those wide men, which, you know, when the opposition is aware that that's what they're going to do, they just double up on them, essentially, or they put a little bit more pressure on it and they make it more difficult for that player to work his magic. But I just think there's real isolation at that top end of the pitch. Despite the amount of talent that there is, there's nobody making those dummy runs. There's nobody getting in behind, giving, you know, defenders extra options to deal with, essentially. It feels like once the ball gets to that area of the pitch, the midfield, I don't want to get back onto Yates and Colback, but I do think it gets there. The midfield goes, okay, we've done our bit. You guys go and do what you're paid to do, essentially. And you watch it in the sense that if there's someone on the right, let's say it's Knockaert on the right, then you have Taylor somewhere around the penalty box. The left winger, let's say it's Amiobi, is either on near the far post or might be, you know, outside the area and what have you, expecting the cross to go overhead so he can get it back in. There's just not enough support in those areas. So I think it's a structural issue more than anything. As it is in the defence, Forest are not attacking as a team at this moment in time. And that is why you're not getting the best out of some of the best creative players, I think, in the whole division.
Yeah, I think there's a code to be cracked. I mean, coming back to our earlier point regarding Forest's anxiety and the mentality of the team when we go a goal behind. If you take today's game against Swansea, I think even those who want to give the team a kicking right now, because that just, it feels like fun sport, I think even those individuals would concede that for the first 20, 25, 30 minutes, Forest looked good. Mm. I mean, we were moving the ball around nicely. Possession numbers were up. We created the two best chances of the match. We looked decent until we went behind. And there seems to be, you know, this direct correlation between that moment in a match and all of our creativity from that point on.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. We've had those games where we've got a goal behind and all of a sudden, you know, we've been throwing the ball at the goal and trying to create chances and we've gotten shots, maybe not always on target, but, you know, we look threatening. And that, I think, is when we run up our numbers. The commentator in the Swansea game today was talking about how, you know, even though Swansea were just outside the playoff places and Forest just outside of the relegation places, that doesn't tell the full story because Forest's possession stats this season have been so much better. And our attempts on goal this season, our numbers have been so much better than Swansea's. Well, yeah, but you've got to look at that within context. A lot of that has happened when we've been behind, right? We've had teams that have scored against us and then have just sat. I'm like, you're not good enough to break us down right now. You don't have the confidence to do it. So we're just going to wait here and we'll just counterattack. And that's when we get our possession numbers up typically. That's when we get our chances to shoot from outside of the box. You know, and that's not, with the exception of a couple of players on our team, that's never going to yield results. And that's when our numbers get run up. So really it's a false paradigm there. But I'm wondering about this connection between going a goal down and all of a sudden real creativity. I don't mean just getting the ball, chucking the ball into the final third and you know, keeping the opposition defenses busy. Real creativity, the way it just seems to sap out of our team the minute we go a goal down. And maybe that comes back to what you said initially about trust, but to me, that's the code that needs to be cracked.
The frustrating thing, I think, from, I completely agree with your point, Mark, in the sense that the minute that Forest went 1-0 down today and go 1-0 down in any game, that creative energy seems to fall out of the team. But if you look at the two biggest chances from the game today, so the Lyle Taylor flick that just goes wide comes from nice bit of interplay, an early cross into the box, Taylor making a clever move and getting close to it. And you're thinking, right, do that more. Do that more now, Forrest. You've got a template that works here. If you whip an early ball into Taylor and he manages to get free of his man, he's a devastating finisher. We know what he can do. Forrest will score a goal. Okay, so that's the first chance. Forrest didn't do that again throughout the whole game, essentially. The second point is when we talk about this idea of Forrest being reliant on individuals. When you've got an individual that is as good and as creative as Anthony Knockaert, you can kind of get away somewhat with giving the ball and see what he can do. So he gets the ball in a good position on the right-hand side, goes on an absolutely brilliant run. It's a terrible finish, granted, but it's a brilliant run and it's an illustration of what he can do. And you're thinking, watching that, right, see what you've just done there, Forrest. You've managed to get Knockaert in a good position. He shrugged off his man superbly. He's got a shot away and he was close. Just keep doing that. Keep doing that and you'll get somewhere. The minute Swansea score that first goal, granted it was at the end of the first half, so it's probably more accurate to look at the way Forest approached it in the second half, they didn't do that system to try and get it into Taylor at all, and they didn't try and get the best out of Knockaert whatsoever. It seems like because Forest don't take a chance, they think, well, if we didn't score that one, we're never going to score one like that again. Whereas the reality is, actually, if you keep pestering with that system and that template of play and that approach and what have you, you're probably going to get something. And I just think the momentum, you're right, from an attacking point of view, especially, just completely dropped from Forest going into that second half. And it felt like, if anything, the way Forest were going to equalise from that game was through pure luck, I think, rather than any quality. it was going to be for a penalty decision or a Swansea mistake. There wasn't anything coming from Forest. And that was frustrating because, like you say, in that first 25, 30 minutes, Forest created the two best chances and seemed to be on top. And then the minute they go 1-0 down, it all falls flat again.
Yeah. Yeah. So I asked you a question about the defensive midfielders. I asked you one or two. I'm going to ask you the same question as it relates to strikers. We know that throughout his career, Chris Hughton very much leans into the whole one striker principle. You mentioned other fan bases giving us a heads up, warning us what we can expect, pros and cons as it relates to Chris Hughton and his coaching style. But he is a big proponent of the one striker approach. Is that the right approach for this Nottingham Forest team, given that we don't have, outside of Taylor and Grabham, we don't have any proven goal scorers, those who can lead the line and can score 15 to 20 goals pretty much every season? Most of our attacking quality is those players that surround them, right? The Amiobis, the Freemans, the Knockarts, Arters, and so on. So is one up front the right way to go? Is Hughton onto something there? Or does Taylor, or when he's fit, Grabban, need the additional support of an extra striker up alongside them?
It's a really, really difficult question because there's an element to me that says, yes, you've got to go with two because Forest aren't scoring goals and you improve your chances of scoring a goal if you've got two strikers on the pitch. I think personally, Forest are kind of best suited to a 4-2-3-1 where the number 10, the attacking midfielder, gets right up and close to Lewis Grabban and to Lyle Taylor, Lewis Grabban, what have you, and almost plays effectively as like a false nine somewhat. He gets that close up to Taylor because the problem with the way when Forest have played that formation so far this season is it's almost that they've played it like, you know how when you see a graphic of a formation, there's always a gap in between different areas of the pitch. Forest play like that, I think. And the three that support a striker, they should be much, much closer to him than you know, the reality of a Forest play at the minute. There does seem to be a distinct gap. And I think the way that you counter not playing two strikers is you make sure you've got a number 10 who's going to go up and get right close to Taylor and support him. So that would be what I would go with. The ideal player for a position like that is Luke Freeman because he's
Let me ask you that because I was about to put you on the spot. So within the formation that you just described, assuming that Arta plays alongside Yates and assuming Amiobi and Knockart take up positions out wide or, you know, let's just go with that for right now. And assuming that either Grabban or Taylor are at the point, that essentially leaves you with three potential candidates for that number 10. Mm-hmm. Freeman, you mentioned, Guero, and Lolly. What are your thoughts on who gets that shirt?
I think, for me, it's either Freeman or Lolly. I mean, Guero, I mean, he's only played a handful of games for Forest and it's been a real mixed bag. Some weeks he's looked a real asset. Other weeks he's looked really out of his depth. I think Lolly...
I think you're being generous. I think he's looked like a real asset one game, for my money at least, but anyway.
True. But I think Lolly's form has been real on a downward kind of spiral over the last, you know, 6-7 months or so, especially since Championship football picked up again at the back end of last season. And Freeman, I just don't know why it hasn't clicked for him so far, but I think, do you know what? I think your best bet might be to go with Lolly in that position of the pitch, just because I know I'm countering what I said earlier about how his form has been so poor in the sense that out wide, I think in the last couple of months for Forest, he's looked quite lonely and isolated. Whereas if you play him in that attacking midfield and get him close towards, you know, Lyle Taylor, you could get some results out of him because we know what a quality player he is. The problem with moving him into that area of the pitch is you neglect his ability at cutting inside and you know, unleashing a fierce shot at goal or a brilliant cross. But we haven't seen that for so long. It almost makes you think that part of his game is gone. So I'd play him as the 10, but it should be Luke Freeman's position. He should have made that his own this season. And I think that's the worrying thing for Forest, that's a player that, like you say, the Reds brought in. People knew what he was going to bring. And he just simply hasn't brought it, and that is a concern, because that position out of all of them should have been the one that picks itself, really. Out of the new signings anyway, Luke Freeman is one of the best number 10s in the Championship. He should be playing attacking midfield for Forest, but because of the way things are going this season, I'd probably go with Joe Lolley in that area.
Interesting. Well, I may have found the first point at which we diverge, my friend, because I think I would go with Freeman.
Okay.
I think he has also had a mixed bag of a season, but I stand by what I said about Guerrero. I think Guerrero's had one good game. I think he's looked completely out of sorts every other time he's taken to the field for Forest. And Lolley, I still feel, is better deployed out wide. I'm not convinced with him as a number 10. I think he could play that role, I think, given time. Unfortunately, that's the one thing Forest don't have the luxury of right now. We know Freeman can play that position. That is his position primarily, even though he's been deployed as a wide man as well in his career. But either way, I think, I don't know that that's the biggest, you know, I think as a fan base, we always used to focus on Carvalho, right? We always used to say that he was either the crux of the problem or he was the messiah. Either way, it hung off of him, and it hung off of whether A, he got to play, and B, how he played, which is unfair. He's one piece of the puzzle. I think the same is true here. I think Freeman and Lolley both had the ability to influence a game. They both have the ability to win matches from that number 10 position, I think. I just think I would probably be more inclined to put my money on Freeman. But let me ask you this. What Big Wes asked what's ended up being a really salient question earlier in the season. He asked, I think it was a couple of games in, he said, you know, I don't really know what the identity of this team is right now. Clearly they're rocking from the end of last season, but we've got these new players in, and at the time Lamucci was trying to mold them, and Big Wes said, I really don't get it yet. I don't know what he's trying to do. I don't see the identity. Do you see the identity at this point, James?
I think the team are designed to be solid and effective, but that is simply not the case.
Yeah.
Effective in both boxes, solid in the middle, and that just simply is not the case. So I can see what the model is. It's just been executed really poorly. Mm-hmm. You know, who you attribute that to, that's, you know, that's up to individual interpretation. But I can see what the plan is. It's just, you know, it's not a very intellectual answer, I know, but it's just not working. I know what's being tried to do, but it's so dysfunctional. It's unbelievable. So
it's like a modern Star Wars movie. You absolutely know what the template is. You absolutely know what you're supposed to be seeing on screen, but yet what you get isn't quite it, right? No. Yeah. It's disappointing.
Yeah, that's a very apt description of it. Yeah, it's the identity is you know, where's this is spot on. I mean, I can see what they're trying to do, but it's just not working essentially, and it hasn't worked for a very, very long time. I think Sabri Lamucci lost the identity that he had cultivated at Forest in that last couple of months of the season. And Chris Hughton is yet to really firmly establish it. I think he's trying to create a little bit of a template, per se, of what he wants to build on in the future. Like I say, something that's solid, something that's effective. But it's just not that at this moment in time.
It's just not. Okay. Let's transition to predictions. Let's look at the next few games and run ourselves through the mill here and try and come up with anything other than a defeat in the next three matches. Before we do that, though, I'm going to ask you one final question as it relates to players. Which one player in the current squad would you like to see more of? Who do you feel has not been given a fair crack of the whip yet, or maybe through injury has been sidelined, but you feel like if they could come into the starting 11 – could really have an impact, and you'd like to see them be given more of a chance?
It's a good question. I'm going to go back to defence and my previous point about bringing in Joe Worrell I think Joe Worrell would be the place person I would like to see back. Mm-hmm. He came under a lot of criticism at the end of last season, and understandably so. His performances did dip, but this is a man who is 100% committed to Forest.
Yeah.
I mean, there were rumours that he might leave in the summer, but there was never any kind of substance to that whatsoever. I don't think he would want to leave. And, you know, he would bring a leadership and a steel and a little bit more resilience, I think, to that back four, which is vitally important. So I would say he would be the player within that Forest squad who we haven't seen a great deal of so far this season to come in. And I think the difference is bringing an Embiid, bringing a Maitland into the fold, because they're young players, you're not necessarily sure what you're going to get. Mm. Some might say you're not sure what you're going to get with Worrell because of his injury issues and what have you. I get that, but we know how good he can be. And I think in this period of adversity, he could be a real kind of person to revitalise Forrest's campaign, essentially. So I would be he would be the one that I would throw in, yeah.
Okay, good pick. You mentioned Maitland. He was certainly in my thoughts. My pick would be Freeman. I think you put that team out there today, you switch out Freeman for Guerrero. I don't know that necessarily changes the result, but I like the look of that team so much more. And I trust the creativity that comes from Luke Freeman. And I think he deserves the opportunity. I think he deserves another crack of the whip. Because I don't think I think in the performances so far, I don't think he has been terrible. I think he's ranged from being very good to being decent. He hasn't torn up any trees, and I think that's why he's drawn some criticism from the fan base on social media. But he's a player I'd like to see be given a fair crack of the whip under Hooton. Okay, so let's look at the next three fixtures, my friend. The very next one being Forest at home on Wednesday. God, they just keep coming thick and fast, don't they? Wednesday, December the 2nd, they have Watford at the City Ground. Then on Saturday, the 5th of December, we're away at Reading, followed by the following Wednesday again, Wednesday, the 9th of December, away at Norwich. So not only are the games coming thick and fast, they don't get any easier. I mean, arguably, that's three very tough fixtures. And with Forest's state of mind and run of form, well, I don't know. What do you think, my friend? Let's start with Watford first.
I think this is the one where, out of those three games that the Forest have got coming up, I think this is the one that is the most winnable.
Agreed.
Because I think Watford have, whilst they're there or thereabouts, essentially in the playoff picture, they've tripped up a couple of times this season. They haven't played particularly well. I think their Premier League know-how has kind of got them to a decent position so far. So I think this is, if Forest turn up and turn up properly, I don't mean a half-hearted attempt. I mean, as in Forest are all guns blazing 100%, then Forest can win this game. I think the more likely result is probably a draw. So I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw in this game.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I have the same sentiment that you do as it relates to Watford and the winnability of this match from the three, which doesn't really make any sense. Because if you look at the statistics, you know, they've only lost two games. Norwich, who are currently top of the table, have only lost two games. Reading have actually lost four games. Watford currently sit in third spot. But I agree with you. I think there's I won't go so far as to say a fragility, but there's...
They've been unconvincing so far.
Yeah. And they just really have, like you said, they haven't found that convincing kind of a rhythm yet, that convincing kind of a groove that would suggest that they're necessarily going to hold a spot. Well, they're necessarily going to be challenging for either of those top two spots as they are presently, or maybe even maintain a spot within top six. But who knows? I mean, if you're Watford and you want any team right now to play to get another 3 points, it's Nottingham Forest. So I will go with a 2-1. I'll go with a 2-1. I was going to go with a 1-0, but Watford have scored quite a lot of goals this year, and I think it's unlikely we're going to keep a clean sheet. So 2-1 Forest. Okay, next up, we have Reading.
Hard game, this.
A really hard game.
And they turned it round at the at the weekend, getting back to winning ways. Mm-hmm. This is going to be difficult. This is a real difficult run-in for Forest. I mean, the last three games were tough, but Forest should have looked at Barnsley away and, you know, maybe the Swansea game today and thought, you know, if we turn up, we can get something. Whereas these three games, God, you know, it's really, really stacked against Forest. I'd never predict a Forest defeat on here. But I think the best that Forest can hope for is a bit of a draw. But I think it will be, if it's going to be a draw, I think it will be a high scoring one, because I think Forest will need to, because Reading will score goals, because they have done across the course of the season. So I'm going to go for 2-2.
Yeah, Reading, I think, are the second or third highest top goal scorers in the division. So, James, I like you. I struggle with predicting a Forest defeat. And I know it's completely... it doesn't make any sense to suggest a 2-2 draw, as you have just done and I am about to do. So, but that's where I'm going. I'm going 2-2. I don't think we get to. I don't think we look like idiots if it didn't come out right, because I think everyone listening to this will have a sympathetic ear and recognise that we're struggling with this. But 2-2 it is. Okay, and then arguably the toughest of the bunch away against Norwich, who, as I mentioned earlier, sit top of the table right now with 28 points after 14 matches. Not much of an offensive output. They've just been pretty solid all around. You know, to your point in regards to Watford, I think Norwich have looked pretty convincing. They found their groove nice and early. This is going to be a difficult one.
Yeah, this is going to be another difficult one. You're right. I think they look a lot more composed than I think at the very start of the season. There were a few question marks about Daniel Farker after their relegation last year, but they had a lot of transfers across the course of the summer as well. There was a lot of business there, but they're really developing into arguably the best team in the division again, like they were two
seasons. Them or Bournemouth, right? Probably.
Yeah, it's going to be between those two. But again, I love the journey that we've gone on this podcast, Mark, in the sense that we had your downbeat introduction. We've had incredible misery and heartbreak across the course of the piece. And then we've both predicted 4 points for for Forest from the next two games. So following in that suit, I'm going to say, do you know what? Derby went to Norwich earlier in the season and won 1-0. And granted, Forest don't have a Wayne Rooney who can bang a free kick in the 88th minute or however late it was in the game to win it for them. But I think because the expectation will be so high on Norwich going into this game to get a win, I'm going to be incredibly brave and say Forest will nick this one 1-0.
You're mental.
Yeah. it's been a long week. It's been a long week.
So I'm going to break from tradition. I'm going to do something that regular listeners to the show will know I never do, which is predict a Forest defeat. I think I've been incredibly optimistic in my previous two predictions. I can't see Forest getting anything out of this one. I don't see them getting battered. I really think that give Chris Hughton time, he'll turn the ship around. I think it's going to get worse before it... Well, it can't get worse. It's going to continue to feel pretty crappy for a while before it gets better. But in Hughton, I really do trust it. You know, it typically has taken him a season to assess his surroundings and to really implement his style. And, you know, to Big Wes's point, to help a team create an identity that enables him to win, enables him to get over the line, and in several instances, get promotion to the Premier League. And I think next season is going to be Hughton's season. So I think there's more pain and misery for us to, in inverted commas, look forward to this year. And that's all a roundabout way of saying that I think Forest are going to lose this 1-0. And it doesn't get any easier because the following game there against Brentford, so who currently are in sixth position and who have actually looked really good. I think they've looked Watford-esque. They've had the high moments and they've had their disappointing moments, but we know they're a good outfit and their XG is just crazy. So couldn't help myself. James, thank you so much, mate, for spending some time discussing Forest players and their season so far. You know, I would say that wasn't pleasant. That was painful, but actually you made it pleasant. It was actually really, really fun talking to you about the team and the season so far. So I appreciate you.
Thank you very much for having me on, Mark. But I do think I have to go for a bit of a lie down in a dark room now, because that was so depressing at times, talking about how poor things are from Forest. But, you know, building on the 7 points they're going to pick up in the next three games, or who knows, maybe we were being a bit too negative with those predictions, Mark. You know, 9 points out of a possible 9, who knows. But, yeah, always a pleasure coming on Forest Fancast, so thank you.
I'm immediately calling your nearest hospital and having them send an ambulance around to get you, to check you for concussion, if nothing else. I do really appreciate James working with me on this one. It's never easy as a two-hander. I think it's easier when you have these kind of conversations, when you have at least three voices in the mix. And I hope this is a conversation that continues when we expand the conversation into talking about the club more broadly, coaching, leadership, and just some of those structural components of Nottingham Forest, a club that need addressing in order for us to have a foundation to be successful on the field. But for the time being, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Again, I thank James for joining me. I've been Mark. This has been Forest Fancast. James, I'm struggling here, man. We've got to try and rustle up enough energy to go out with the U Reds. Do you think we can do that?
I think we can muster one. Come on, Mark. We can do it.
All right, on three. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. You that was suitably flat.